Media Focus with Paul Blanchard.
Hello and welcome. This week, TV channel London Live is already in crisis as the head quits after just 3 weeks and a near-zero audience has been recorded. The comedian Lenny Henry says boycott the licence fee because the BBC are failing to have enough black and minority ethnic faces on television. Is he right? And UKIP and Nigel Farage. Are the media guilty of bias? And why does the UKIP leader receive so much media attention? We're joined by Henry Mance, media correspondent for the Financial Times, and Baroness Jenny Jones, London Assembly member for the Green Party, and recently ennobled into the House of Lords as a peer of the realm, no less. Guys, thanks for joining us.
Media Focus.
London Live was the dream of Evgeny Lebedev, owner of the Evening Standard newspaper, but it seems that it might be becoming a nightmare already. It has recorded close to zero audience figures for some of its news programmes, with the viewing figures for its breakfast show averaging just 2,400 people. And just 3 weeks after launch, London Live's editorial director Stefano Hatfield was given the boot. Do Londoners even want another TV channel, or have those writing off the channel called its time of death too early? Henry.
It's a really interesting one, and if you look at how London Live's positioned itself, it's going for a younger audience, it's going for 18 to 30, that kind of area. Perhaps you might think that's the sort of the zone that Channel 4 operates in. And it has some ideas about doing things that are irreverent, not the one show, playing off other channels, playing off the sort of perceived failings of other channels in the eyes of that younger audience. However, that is the audience that is most likely to be moving away from linear TV, that's more likely to be getting their stuff online with YouTube, it's more likely to be going to Netflix. That, of course, lay behind the BBC's decision to move BBC Three online only. So whether they've chosen an audience that will really be drawn to a new linear TV channel, I think it's a really tough one.
Do you think the fact that it's available on Freeview and available to Londoners, do you think they're hoping that channel hoppers will happen upon one of the channels and just stay on from that way?
Yeah, the big strength for London Live is that it's up there. You know, sheer laziness determines a lot of viewing. So you turn on the TV, it's BBC One, you stay there. You scroll down one, you get to BBC Two. You don't have to scroll down very far to get there. I mean, that's what keeps QVC in a healthy financial position, the fact that it's up there. And, you know, QVC, for example, would absolutely hate to be moved down to 40 or 50 next to other shopping channels. And in fact, they've resisted that in the past with the cable operators. So that's really important, getting that sort of viewer inertia. But it will take a bit of getting used to. I think the figures may need to be taken with a bit of salt so far. And again, if you think that Freeview is a whole lot of channels, then yes, there's some inertia, but there's also a great sort of pressure to keep moving, or there are exciting things to find lower down the list.
Jenny, you're a London politician, a member of the London Assembly. Do you welcome the fact that there's another London TV channel? Is this another platform for you to communicate with your voters, or do you think they're already saturated already?
I was excited about the whole idea of a London channel. I thought that would give me lots of opportunities to understand perhaps that particular age group, because a lot of them don't vote. And I thought, well, it'd be interesting to be a little bit more clued up. But, you know, I haven't watched it once. And I don't know why that is. Partly because I don't have that much time. But also I wonder if they don't advertise it enough, or if they do advertise it and it's advertising that appeals to a completely different age group.
There is that issue, isn't there, that it's heavily promoted in the Evening Standard, but the readers of the Evening Standard are not the key demographic that London Live are targeting.
Well, I read the Evening Standard almost every evening, and I haven't even spotted any ads for it, so obviously it's not drawing my eye.
Henry, do you think, we were chatting earlier before, do you think that this is they should have perhaps gone down the podcasting route or something to reconnect with people of that audience rather than that linear TV channel?
That's a really interesting point to make. When I've spoken to other TV channels, they all have local TV channels. This is under the government's initiative. They all have slightly different ideas of how to do it. I was quite impressed by what STV were doing in Scotland, really building a good app which had lots of services which were useful about weather, about events, about offers in those cities of Edinburgh and Glasgow. And then you can maybe build video around that, and you can build your television platform. But you're first and foremost useful. There would seem to me lots of information about London available from other outlets like Time Out. If you were to build in video to a Time Out app or to integrate that online, then that would seem to have some good chance of winning amongst that demographic that they're looking for. This seems a bit disconnected. And the real problem, I think, is that the content on London Live is not unmissable and is not sufficiently distinctive to what's on elsewhere. So tonight, I see in the schedule at 8 p.m., there's there's Food Junkies, for example, which is a food show where a guy goes around and looks at different types of food available in London. I think people would say that's not sufficiently surprising. It's not particularly different to anything that's in the TV guide on other channels. And it really struggles to fill half an hour. So it doesn't look to me like they've got a useful enough platform, which is what the Scottish guys are trying to do, or great content, which is what, say, Netflix is trying to offer, or Sky are trying to offer at the moment.
I mean, Jenny, you said that you didn't have time. You wish the channel well. I'm the same, really. I like the idea of it, but on the other hand, I don't find actual time for it. And I was thinking of it. I'm a Londoner. What I would do to take my local news is to watch a video podcast on the way in on the tube, or just catch After News at 10 on ITV or BBC One. But I don't, for me personally, I don't think sitting down, I don't sit down to watch any TV channel these days. I don't know what your viewing habits are.
Oh, I watch TV for an hour in the evenings just to de-stress. And
is that just what's on, or is it a specific programme that you've got saved?
I like police shows. That's my favourite, because they suck me in. But I'm starting to feel guilty about London Live, and I'm just thinking that I'll go home this evening and actually watch 10 or 15 minutes and see if there's anything I really want to, actually watch on a...
What would you want to see on it?
I suppose if they had political content, I would probably watch that. And also, I guess, if it was films that I felt I'd missed in other places or something. But my viewing's very simple.
You would have thought, with it being a London-wide TV channel, that the Assembly would have been one of the key providers of content, if you can just put it that bluntly.
Well, you're right. I mean, they haven't asked me to go on once. But then I'm not their demographic, and perhaps I don't appeal to their demographic. No, you're right. I would have liked to see more politics on it, because what's happening in London is actually quite exciting.
Mm.
And the rest of Britain thinks that London politics dominates Britain. And so if that's even partly true, it should be interesting enough for a London TV channel.
Henry, do you think that's the issue then, that the content that it ought to be offering, local politics, local news and so on, is not the kind of content that the demographic they're aiming at is interested in terms of a live linear station? You ended up with Food Junkies instead.
I think if you look at the vision for the channel a year ago and what it's ended up being, I think they're quite different things, in terms of there was meant to be, at one stage, much more news content, and that may have been part of their discussions with Ofcom, etc. Now it's much more of an entertainment show. I mean, I think if Jenny goes home tonight and looks for political content in a film,
she'll be disappointed.
I hate to break it to her, but no, she's going to see a couple of repeats of entertainment shows. I would be cautious about really saying this will offer a forum for London politics, because it doesn't look like that's their vision. Those kind of channels are also, those 24-hour news channels, and indeed news broadcasting in general in the evenings, is under some questioning at the moment. I mean, people.
What as to its viability per se?
Yeah, I mean, okay, the big national bulletins have huge audiences, but that, the younger demographic, again, if we go back to it, they're looking online all day at news if they want it, if they're interested in it. They're seeing posts on Facebook, on Twitter all day. So why would you necessarily come home and sit down and watch a similar type of content? That's the question. I mean, I don't think the viewing figures are revealing any particular crash at the moment, but I think it's something that's being asked.
Jenny, do you think the traditional channel is dead per se? I mean, I'll give you an example. I have a friend of mine that always watches a show 10 or 15 minutes after it's actually started on network telly, so that he can then forward wind through the adverts, and by the time he gets to the last bit, that's that he catches up with live telly. But I also have friends who deliberately watch series late. They'll start it, watching it on iPlayer, four or five episodes in, because they want to binge watch it. They don't want to have to kind of wait every week like you used to do on a cliffhanger to see what happens. They want to watch it at their own circumstances. Do you think that this is a problem that the industry is facing generally then, that the channel itself is in trouble?
What you're saying is interesting, because I think of myself as IT illiterate and a bit of a dinosaur on this stuff, but that's exactly what I do. I wait and then I watch things, in intense bursts. And I also, of course, I don't like ads, and so I find things that I can scroll through. I guess there will be the normal TV channels for quite some time yet, simply because not everybody is geared up in that way. But I guess its day is done at some point.
Henry, come on, then make a prediction where we're going to be in about 5 years with all of this, because you speak to lots of different experts that don't quite know. So are you prepared to make a prediction in terms of will there be the same number of channels or none or even more? What will happen?
Just starting with the local TV channels, I think as Ender's analysis put it, history is against this experiment. So we'll see whether number 8 is still occupied by London Live in 5 or 10 years. with regards
to 5 to 10 months, perhaps.
I thought you were an optimist, Jenny, on these kind of things.
Well,
there are limits. With regards to channels in general, at the moment, the mood in the industry, I think, is fairly confident. People feel that yes, certain demographics, certain very busy people, maybe technologically literate people, are moving away. But a lot of people come home and in an evening just plonk themselves in front of the TV and watch a lot of TV. So I think the jury is out, and people have seen these forecasts so many times before that the television will fall off a cliff. Yeah. And that because the figures have not borne that out in the past and are not bearing that out now, I think the industry feels fairly confident. I mean, you look at the share price of something like ITV, that would show investors don't believe people are going to stop watching linear TV with lots of adverts in.
But they also thought that Friends Reunited was going to be their cash cow forever, didn't they? So sometimes they particularly do get it wrong. What did you think to Jenny's point, though, about that it might get shut down more quickly than people might argue? For example, Stefano Hatfield only managed 3 weeks in the job as launch editor and he already is out. Lebedev seems to act quite quickly. Do you think he might see the writing on the wall in a few weeks and then act quickly? Or do you think, what's your gut feeling in terms of how long he'll give it?
What I would say is that Yevgeny Lebedev has invested in businesses where the profitability is really under strain. So if you look at The Independent and if you look at now at local TV, I mean, local TV was everyone said it was going to be a tough bet.
Yeah. Always has been, really.
Always has been. And you would need, perhaps to have any guarantee that these things are going to be around in a sustained period of time, you would need really deep pockets. His father has spoken about the family not having particularly deep pockets at this moment because of the restrictions they face in Russia. At one stage, they said they were dependent solely on their potato farm. So in that case,
as we're all big.
I don't know the economics of potato farming particularly well. What is undoubtedly true is that the Lebedevs have innovated.
Yeah.
What is perhaps less clear is whether that innovation will actually bring financial rewards. Look at I, which was a really exciting idea of a very cheap newspaper.
Yeah.
It has lessened their losses in recent years, but it's also a stopgap solution. Because if you think of the market going to a place where there are no print newspapers, or there are very rarely print newspapers, then that are paid for, then how does that prepare them for a digital world? The answer is it doesn't necessarily. So that innovation may not be the foundation of a business that really gets going.
I might be completely wrong about this, but it did strike me when I first heard about this that it was a vanity project, that Lebedev would be on the channel a lot, would be promoting his ideas and his preferences just as he does through the Evening Standard. But obviously...
Oh, that's very unkind. He's not on every page.
Well, obviously, I haven't seen London Live, so I don't know if he's on it a lot. But it did strike me that he's turned the Evening Standard into something quite, quite different,
yes,
with much less news content and much more celebrity content. And that sort of suits people who are going home in the evening and want just not to be challenged.
I don't think he can be blamed for that. That's what people want. He has to produce a newspaper that people read.
Do people want it, or is it what they get? I really don't know.
The comedian Lenny Henry has called on the BBC to improve its recruitment of people from culturally diverse backgrounds or face a boycott of the licence fee. He's to take part in a mass protest of Parliament at the lack of diversity in British television. Is he right that black and ethnic minority people are still underrepresented on television? And if so, what's to be done to fix this? And is threatening a boycott the way to go? Jenny?
I don't like the idea of a boycott, but I do like the idea of a protest of some sort, because I think it is true that most TV channels do not represent wider society. And Lenny Henry, I think, has been talking about it's not only about black and ethnic minority, but it's also about women who are severely underrepresented in the BBC. And it's also about gay and disabled people. We should all have a share of our national channel, and the BBC has got a fair way to go.
Henry's a boycott the way to go?
I think the BBC would be pretty upset if someone who's been so associated with the broadcaster were to launch or lead a boycott. I mean, in the same way that they're fairly upset, I imagine, when people like Jeremy Paxman and come out and criticise the organisation. I think their point of view in the past has been that affects morale, and you can see where they're coming from on that one. I think this is an interesting one. I think Jenny frames it in the right context, which is this is about television. It seems to me more about television than about the BBC. the BBC becomes the forum in which to explore all these issues about what television should be.
Because of the licence fee. So.
Because of the licence fee. But I think if it's a case of viewers wanting and, in fact, deserving a coverage that reflects more closely their society, then it's fair to make that comment about ITV, about Channel 4, about Channel 5 and about other broadcasts. And I know, actually, that Lenny Henry was talking to Peter Fitcher about ITV. So this issue. So I would like to see it framed in that context, in which case it doesn't become about necessarily about a boycott of the licence fee, or that at least becomes a less logical step. I have no view on whether that's a good idea or not, but I do have a view that this is about television and not about the BBC per se.
And what of the charge itself? Do you, when you look at television programmes on the national television, do you think that they don't reflect the cultural diversity of Britain? I mean, I think they do, but I, to be honest, I've not given it any further thought, really. My first thought when I read what he said is, I thought that there wasn't much merit in it. Do you think that that's...
Well, start off with comedy panel shows, because that seems to me the most obvious example of when you very often have six men and a male presenter.
Yeah. But they now have to have a woman on the BBC comedy shows, you know, they're starting.
I think it's particularly just Mock the Week where women underrepresent. I mean, I'm not an advocate for the BBC here, but I'm aware that there's a very blokey kind of culture to Mock the Week, and I agree there's an issue there. But in terms of, like, Have I Got News For You, women are fairly represented there.
Well, I wouldn't say so. They often have a female chair. Not often. They sometimes have a female chair, and they sometimes have a woman on the panel, but it's male-heavy. And you can say that it doesn't really matter, you get the funniest people, but actually it does matter because we want women represented everywhere. Agreed. And there's lots of really good female comedians. So I think I'm in favour of positive discrimination. And so I would support having all minorities and majorities. Women are a majority, remember, in society, 51%. We still don't get a fair shout.
I mean, this is the question. If you think that there's something wrong with TV coverage or who's on TV, then the question is, what do you do about it? It's the same issue that happens with the boards of major companies or the lack of women MPs or ethnic minority MPs. Mm-hmm. A lot of people find it easy to agree there's a problem. It's when you get to the solutions that people find it quite difficult. And I think in the media sector, there's this question, which is, these are meant to be creative organisations, free-thinking organisations. And as soon as you start putting quotas and you start thinking about how things display, some people would say you risk curbing those instincts. Now, you have these very sort of happy or serendipitous stories. I mean, I think when Ricky Gervais was casting The Office, someone came along in a wheelchair and they wrote her into the script because they thought she was the best person for the part. That will not happen in every case. So Jenny has her views and other people would perhaps go less far than she would. But I think that there will be some form of tension there between people who think this is a problem and think there should be action, and people who say, well, look, there's a creative organisation, we need to be left alone, we don't need someone looking over our shoulder and telling us how many male and female actors we need in this show.
But surely if there were programmes where everybody was disabled, for example, or everybody was a woman or whatever, then there would be, it's balance, isn't it? It's about balance. And at the moment, there isn't really balance. And as you said, Henry, almost every organisation suffers from this. Apart from the Green Party, I'd just like to say, because we are very good on women.
Plug in, very well done.
And we don't actually, we don't promote women more. We don't have any sort of positive discrimination, but we just don't put anything in their way. And I think that's partly what other organisations do. And
so, Jenny, do you think that the problem as it is on our screens is just reflective of the problem in society generally,
exactly,
then? Or do you think there's a special duty on broadcasters to buck that trend?
Exactly, because I think they can make a difference. Because if you see a woman in a powerful position, other women can think, oh, I could do that as well. But so often they don't. They don't have any role models. And I think that's where television particularly can play an important role.
I mean, how would that manifest itself then in terms of specific instructions to a TV show producer that they had to have quotas? How would you envisage that working? Because I agree with you. I think, as Henry says, something needs to be done. But I'm also slightly hesitant that we might be creating slightly worthy programmes that tick all the right boxes that no one wants to watch. Because TV is quite brutal. You know, people either watch these shows or they don't.
Yeah, but, you know, there are lots of ethnic minority comedians out there, women comedians. I'm sure there's comedians who are in wheelchairs or whatever. You know, you just have to look for them and find them and make sure that they have representation. I don't, you know, it needs a bit of, you're talking about creative thinking, Henry. It needs some creative thinking. I'm not a creative. I'm a practical doer. But, you know, even I think I could probably, you know, in half a day find, you know, 100 people who could be on a TV comedy panel show. and who would be representative of Britain.
I'd be really interested in seeing what their audience research says on these matters, because I find it hard to believe that a female viewer actually finds it as funny when there are seven men on a comedy show.
Agreed.
And I think it especially reduces the appeal of some of the sort of the bawdier humour. I mean, people aren't talking about curbing speech, but there's the context in which that's done depends on how funny it is. So I think it's much easier, even for a man, to laugh at a slightly borderline joke about, say, gender roles, when there are women also on that panel. I think when it's when you're watching seven men making bawdy jokes or borderline jokes,
it starts to look a bit nasty, doesn't it?
Really? Very quickly, and they and so. Has this come through in the BBC's audience research? Has it come through in ITV's audience research? I'd be really interested to know that.
If we're talking about organisations that don't have enough representation from everybody, from the wider society, if we just look at the House of Lords for a moment, people keep saying to me, do you know Lord so-and-so? And I have to say, look, I might, but there are so many old white men in the House of Lords, I just don't know if I've met him or not. There should be more women, there should be more ethnic minorities, more disabled. Of course there should be. And there aren't. And that's down to the government. And to some extent, I think it is down to the media, because if the media promoted people more, then there would be more people obviously, seen and put into the House of Lords. I've no idea why they appointed me, having said that.
On merit, I would say.
Obviously,
I'm a fan,
yes.
Jenny, obviously. But Henry, do you think Jenny has a point, though? Because the BBC does sit, and other broadcasters do seem to be taken to task by female presenters who get to a certain age and then they say that they've been abandoned, they take these people to tribunals and the tribunals agree with them and say, yes, there's a dearth of senior, slightly older female presenting talent on screen, and then they're given something to do, as it were. You know, a job is found for them and they tend to do it very well. Do you think that is an issue?
I think the problem probably starts earlier, where if you're a woman, it very much helps to be attractive to get on TV. And then when you cease to be so attractive in the eyes of the producers, then you're no longer on TV. I mean, what would be great is if that wasn't such a criteria for women at all stages of their lives. I think television is changing a little bit, and at least attitudes are changing a little bit, but not the case on every programme. I was reading in the Evening Standard on the way here a review of Susanna Reid's performance on ITV's Breakfast Show. And
they were about her legs.
All about the dress her legs. She was wearing. It was disgraceful.
Those are commenters on Twitter and so forth, but they're picked up in the newspaper. How is it possible the show's producers are not going to read that big page three article and think about it a bit, and then think about how they present the programme in that light?
Jenny, do you think that that is just a classic example of casual sexism, that no one discussed what the male presenters were wearing because, of course, they were wearing a suit?
Yeah, I mean, the day that Jeremy Paxman's legs get discussed.
His beard did for some time. That was quite.
That's true, actually.
Dominated,
yes.
The news agenda of the whole country,
yeah,
for about 3 days.
I think that if you talk to women, virtually all of them will tell you that casual sexism is part of their lives. And you know, young women particularly are made to feel quite often very uncomfortable by people they work with or by men in the street. So sexism is alive and well. And the media, to some extent, has, I would say, a duty to combat that, you know, and to put some effort into creating a sort of society that is actually good for us all to live in. Or do you think that's too big a role for the media? Do you think that's too demanding?
Too big a role. Does the media have a duty, then, to promote equality?
Well, then we go back to the real difficulty for the BBC, which is that it's meant to be a world-leading creative organisation, the best of British television, the best of British radio, pump that around the world, and yet it has political burdens are put upon it. Now, it has, for example, the burden to move to Salford. Now, should it have to, say, take almost a slight hit by being the broadcaster that makes more of an effort?
Which arguably it's taken a massive hit moving to Salford. I mean, no one goes up there. If I can get a client physically to Manchester, they're going to be on breakfast the next day because they're desperate. Everything that happens here in London. And to me, that just seems like a piece of social engineering at the behest of the government. No? You might think that I couldn't possibly comment.
So it goes back to what we want the BBC to be for, and what people in the BBC might feel. I wouldn't deny for a second that this is a big issue. The question comes: can they address it in a way that doesn't disrupt the creative atmosphere there at the BBC?
And the other area of controversy which affects the BBC, and of course all other broadcasters, is how they cover UKIP and its leader Nigel Farage. Is there too much coverage? Is it disproportionate? Jenny?
The media is giving so much coverage to UKIP and they don't have any policies. All they have is sort of a few headlines to wave around. If the Green Party had that amount of coverage, we'd wipe the floor with, for example, the Lib Dems. We'd probably have a good go at Labour and the Tories.
But do you not think the media are just kind of reacting to the fact that they have a personable character in the form of Nigel Farage? He drinks pints.
He wears a smoking jacket,
presumably at home. And
Yeah, I think that he's a bit like Boris Johnson. He's sort of good TV.
But do you not think that's what the media wants and he gives them it and therefore he's rewarded with that coverage, as it were?
Well, he is rewarded, but at the same time, well, again, it goes back to responsibility. The fact is, UKIP is a fairly nasty party with some quite nasty people in it.
I wouldn't disagree with that.
And, you know, what's the media doing? Promoting them out of all proportion of their vote share. Admittedly, they might get more in these Euro elections. But if you look at the councillors, if you look at their MEPs, they do not represent the people they are elected to represent. They take the money and run, basically. I just think that's not the sort of politician we want. Why are people moan all the time about politicians, yet they don't elect the people who actually will be good ones?
Henry, Jenny's blatant self-interest aside, do you think her criticisms have got any merit? You're our media person around this table. You know, do you have a secret evil agenda to promote UKIP amongst all of those?
I think the fact is that UKIP is doing pretty well in the polls, and so that translates into coverage, which translates into more support, which translates into more coverage. If you see the effects of the TV debate on, then I think you understand why Jenny, for example, would be pretty concerned and pretty jealous of that kind of coverage. I think news organisations are fairly, and broadcasts in particular, fairly cautious about balance and fairly clear that only once people get to a certain threshold do they deserve huge amounts of coverage. And I think that's where UKIP seems to have crossed that threshold, at least during the European elections.
So, Jenny, I suppose Henry's point is that the media and UKIP, between them, have created this spectacle, and therefore, like any car crash, people want to keep watching it, and therefore the media have to keep doing it. It's a vicious or a virtuous circle, depending on how you look at it, but the point is they're still dominating the headlines.
Well, you call it a car crash, and that's exactly what it could be, of course. It could all end badly. I suppose I watched it 2 years ago during the London and mayoral elections. I was the mayoral candidate, and I watched the media quite often exclude me. Mm-hmm. And in the end, I beat Brian Paddick. Now, what I'm looking forward to next time is that the Green Party comes before the Lib Dems in terms of coverage, because we beat them last time on the London Assembly. Will that happen? I don't know. You tell me. You're the media person.
Ask the difficult questions, darling, not to answer them. I have no answers at all. But in terms of your suspicions, then, why do you think that is?
Well, first of all, we are fairly serious politicians and we've got a quite serious message. And at the same time, we're probably not good at playing the fool. And that's where Boris Johnson, that's where Nigel Farage get their media coverage. You know, they are good TV because they are buffoons. And that pains me, I've got to say. Jealous is putting it a bit strongly, Henry. But
I mean, Henry, to what extent do you think the media are just acknowledging the reality that these kind of larger-than-life characters seem to resonate with voters?
I think that's absolutely right. And I think there are only a couple. And there really are only Boris and Nigel Farage who have reached that level. And it's a very difficult game to play, to be someone who almost invites mockery and who leaves themselves open to lots of negative stories as well as lots of fun stories. These guys seem to have a Teflon factor. But, there are certain personalities who just wouldn't feel at ease with opening themselves up and wouldn't be as good at it as they are. So it takes two very clever, very confident individuals. Not every party has those. And I think that perhaps the message to those that don't currently is that they should blame the game rather than the players, and realise that in a society where people are perhaps less interested in politics, you have to really go the extra mile by getting people who almost resemble celebrities.
Well, my thanks to Henry and Jenny for coming in. Henry, how do people get hold of you and stalk you on Twitter and kind of follow your various activities on social media?
Yeah, my perfectly crafted tweets are at Henry_Mance. So apologies for those.
And is there an ft.com/media that you can promote?
I think there is actually a media site.
I read it. I'm a closet reader.
I think we do lots of European and international US stuff, so it's hopefully fairly good.
I think the media coverage of the Financial Times is excellent, and I'm not just saying that because you're sitting in front of me. Jenny, how do people stalk you on Twitter and give you various bits of abuse that you were just saying off air?
I know, I get a lot of abuse. It's at Green Jenny Jones.
And is that where you tweet about your work in the House of Lords as well as in the London Assembly?
Yes. Yes. I sound a bit doubtful just because I probably don't tweet enough. But yeah, I do. I do tweet there. And it's all quite personal.
Well, I think that that's a good thing because no one wants to follow some kind of tweet robot, do they? I think people, you know, if you're going to follow someone, of course you're interested in their work and what they're doing. But I also think if you give a sense of yourself as well, that makes your tweets all the more interesting.
Well, somebody told me he was going to stop following me because I talk too much about beer. So, different people have
The next round's on you.
Why does he tell you? Why doesn't he just give up?
I know.
Yeah, I've always thought that.
Yeah.
Someone takes the time and trouble to say why they don't like you. Anyway, don't forget you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Paul W.R. Blanchard. Thank you very much for listening. Catch you next time.
A Big Things Media production.
Big Things!